Discovering Journeys, the podcast where individuals from all walks of life come together to share their experiences. I am your host, Sujala, and in each episode, I bring you unique perspectives from those who have embraced change and growth. Whether you're seeking inspiration, fresh insights, or simply curious about different life paths, this podcast will connect you with journeys that resonate and inspire. Please note, the content shared on this platform is solely for educational, informational, and entertainment purposes. The opinions shared by the guests are their own personal views, as it is based on their personal journeys and should not be construed as professional advice. Thank you. Today's guest is Geraldine Crane, a serene spiritual hypnotherapist and expert in mother wound healing. She brings together her professional background as probation officer in addiction and domestic abuse. With over 20 years of spiritual development, she shares her own journey of breaking free from a painful relationship with her mother in 2017, a transformative experience that now fuels her mission to help women reclaim their peace and self-worth without guilt or shame. This episode is about the topic of mother wound, exploring how these wounds impact self-esteem, relationships, careers, and even parenting. It emphasizes the importance of identifying and healing these wounds and highlights the need for support, overcoming the stigma around seeking therapy and fostering self-acceptance for a healthier relationship with oneself. Let's hear from Geraldine Crane. Hello, Geraldine. Welcome to my podcast and thank you for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Before we speak about your journey, I would like my listeners to know what the topic is about. So how would you describe what is a mother wound and explain its impact on one's life?
Mother wounds are those wounds that have, for me, there's different understanding of mother wounds. Mother wounds can be a generational wound that's been passed down from mother to daughter over generations, because Bethany Webster's written a wonderful book called Discovering the Other Mother, and she was the one who first used the phrase mother wound, as far as I know. And she talks more about this generational wound that's passed down, that women have sacrificed what really makes them, what really fulfills them to fulfill being a mother. And then they've passed that wound of not being able to completely be themselves or, you know, live in alignment with themselves, and pass that pressure and the wounds that's caused then down to their daughter. Like, I did it, now it's your turn. So there's that understanding of mother wounds. But when I'm talking about healing wounds, I'm talking about healing those wounds from having a really difficult, unhealthy, unhappy, even abusive or toxic relationship with your mom, and the wounds that can cause. And it's funny, I work with women around all sorts of different kind of behavior from mom. It could be neglect, it could be physical harm, it could be being deeply enmeshed and codependent on each other. So the women I'd work with tend to be highly sensitive, highly anxious, feel a deep responsibility for everybody else's well-being and take on everybody else's stuff and put themselves last. There tends to be people-pleasing tendencies, low self-worth, feeling like they only have worth if they're serving others, if they're doing for others, and so they really struggle to take care of themselves. There can also be a hyper-independence. You know, they weren't taken care of or protected, so they just, I just get on with it and I'll just do it myself. And they often struggle to ask for help or accept help. And there's many other wounds that show up, but they're the major ones that I see. And anxiety is a big one that comes up and shows in many different ways, and fears of rejection, fears of abandonment. So it's really working around those wounds and helping you heal. And often it's stemmed from mum not being able to give you, being able or willing to give you a safe space to be yourself, to just express your emotions, to be who you are. So if your mum has not been able to give you that, then that's when a lot of these wounds come up.
Does it affect one's sense of self-worth?
Massively. If that, it's kind of expected, isn't it? The one person in the world that should love you unconditionally and accept you exactly as you are is your mum. But when a mother, for one reason or another, has not done that or been able to do that, then it kind of, if she can't do it, then nobody else is going to, if she can't do it, then I mustn't have worth. I mustn't be lovable. There's something wrong. I'm broken in some way. And it's completely untrue, because your mother's inability or unwillingness to bring you that unconditional love and acceptance is all about her and nothing to do with you. It's not about you at all in any way, shape or form. It's all about the wounds that she's carrying that she's not been able to face and heal, which is why, like Bethany Webster talks about, this generational, because often it has been generational, handed down. And it's just your mother, for one reason or another, has not been able to face those wounds and do the healing work. But there is a generation of women and men out there at the minute who are facing these wounds and doing that healing and breaking that cycle. And it's wonderful to see, because the ripple effect is massive.
This is what they call it as breaking the generational trauma, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, does it have an impact also in the relationships, career, parenting, if they haven't identified or healed?
Yeah, it affects every relationship in your life. It affects your work relationships, because you probably people pleasing or being overly independent. You might keep people at arm's length. You might have trust issues. Again, like I say, the people pleasing, that can really affect you at work. You're either just giving too much, or you seem aloof, and people think, quite often they think you're being arrogant, but actually you're just protecting yourself and it's aloofness. Or you do everything for everybody. Like, you're just that fixer in the office and wearing yourself to the bone, and people take advantage of it. Friendships, you can end up attracting people who want that fixer, want you to do everything and fix things for them. And so you attract a lot of takers and not many givers, because you think your worth comes from giving. So that's, you attract the people who want to take that in. Relationships, many, many times the women I work with have been in abusive relationships, because if you haven't been brought up and taught what a healthy, happy relationship looks like and how it functions and what real unconditional love feels like, then actually being in a healthy relationship of any kind can feel quite uncomfortable, because it's unfamiliar. And actually being with somebody who's abusive or mistreats you in any way can feel familiar. So it can feel comfortable, and it just continues that cycle until you're willing to face it and do the healing. It certainly affects your relationship with your children. If you're not willing to face and heal those wounds, you will pass them on. And even while trying to heal them, you can still see it come up. There's still moments I've seen, certainly before I really started doing the deep healing work, my eldest really saw some of my wounds coming up. Luckily, my youngest has seen a lot less of it. And now both of them are getting a much healthier mother. And so the relationships are healthier. But there are wounds that have shown up. The big thing that can make a difference is any mother, any parent can cause harm to their child. The big problem comes is if that parent isn't willing to accept they've caused any harm, and if they're not willing to give space to that child to heal. I believe I will have caused harm to my children at one point or another, because the wounds I was carrying, and because I'm a human being, we just don't get it right all the time. However, when they come to me and say, "You did this wrong," I'm ready to go, "Yeah, I did. I got that wrong." And quite often I've usually said sorry before they've even got, like, "I'm really sorry. I got that wrong today." And I hold the space for them then to tell me how it made them feel. I hold that space for them to say, "I need you to leave me alone for a bit. I need to go and," if they say to me, "I need a bit of space. I need to go and do the work to heal my stuff that you caused," I'd be like, "I'm whatever you need, I'm here, or I will give you space." It's about them and their healing. And that's the difference. Is I really believe a relationship with your mother becomes truly toxic is when she won't accept that she's caused you the harm. She won't take any responsibility for the harm and will not allow you the space to heal. That's when it becomes a major issue.
Does it affect the daughters more or the sons more, or is it just that we are waking up to this new topic that only daughters get affected more?
I think there's different wounds. I think the pressures, I think that mother wound that's passed down mother to daughter comes from being in a patriarchal society where women are expected to be the carers and expected to sacrifice their careers, quite often like whole parts of their personality and their lifestyle put to one side, be a mom now. And that same pressure isn't on men. I was even commenting on with my husband the other day. He quite often will go out and meet other fathers from the local area and go for a drink. It very rarely happens with the mothers, because the mothers feel that much more responsibility to be there and to be taking care of the children. We women are expected to sacrifice more. So I think there is that wound, but there are certainly deep wounds that can be caused between a mother and a son. I would never, ever dismiss that. I specialise in working with women because that's my lived experience, but I have supported men through this stuff too. And yes, you can certainly see it all depends on what that relationship has been like with the mum and the son as to what the wounds can be. I just think it's more prevalent with daughters.
How does one identify mother wound? Because mothers are the primary attachment. We are so connected to them from the beginning. So due to this, it creates doubts about ourselves, whether am I thinking right or just overthinking. How can one recognize this?
I thought my relationship with my mum was amazing up to a certain age. You know, I became her carer when I was 12 and we were incredibly close. But I started getting severe anxiety from being, I would say like my first breakdown was when I was 19, but I think I had signs of anxiety from being 8 years old. And I always believed that it was because the physical pressure put on me being my mum's carer, because she had physical and mental health issues. And I mainly believe that because that's what she told me. That's why I had anxiety. And I very much just absorbed my mum's perception of the world. And her perception of the world was it's me and her against the world. Like I can't diagnose, but she had a very covert narcissistic perspective of the world, that she was the victim and everything was coming against her and everything needed to be about her. She needed to be the center of my universe. And for a long time she was. And it was only when I started to pull away and try and have an identity of my own and have a life of my own that she became nastier and harsher and it more difficult to deal with, and would keep trying to, the guilt trips just really got piled on to the point of, you know, screaming at me if I hadn't answered the phone in time, things like that. I think one of the clearest signs was if I was really truly honest with myself, I was terrified of her. I always backed up, took her perspective, stroked her ego, told her, yes, she was right, she was the victim, because I was scared. Because if I didn't, she could start having a breakdown. She might still start self-harming. She might reject me in some way. And it's that fear of rejection from your mother can be one of the biggest indicators, because children need a mother to survive. So if they fear being rejected, it is a fear of survival. You know, if my mother rejects me, I might not survive. It's that deeply embedded within. So that fear of rejection in any form from your mum, being overly criticized, you know, not being deeply enmeshed anymore. You know, there's those fears of rejection, fears of being, you know, I work with women who've been beaten and locked outside, locked in cars. You know, I've worked with women who've experienced real severe physical abuse, and I'm very emotional and enmeshed. but it's all about that one person in your life who's supposed to love you unconditionally is rejecting you in some way, or you have to be the perfect good daughter to be acceptable. If you feel that pressure in any way, if you're really scared,
mm-hmm.
then there's an issue.
Yeah, then people need to look into it a bit more deeper.
You need to be taking care of yourself first. And a really good healthy relationship with a parent should give you really good strong roots, let you know you're loved no matter what, and then give you wings to fly and support you in being who you are. And if you're not getting that, then there's a problem, and it will be coming out in other wounds in other parts of your life.
What kind of control does a mother have on its child, given the fact that we are naturally drawn to them? Sometimes we cannot recognize, and sometimes we recognize and we don't know how to come out of those clutches of the relationship.
Yeah, there's something really important to acknowledge is that you are programmed. It is written within your DNA to need and want your mother. So I work with women who don't like their mother. They don't adore their mother for good reason, you know, but they still crave them. They still crave that they will do something, change, give them some closure, apologize. And it's partly my job to just get them to accept that that's not going to happen. And actually, rather than looking to their mother for mothering, they look to themselves. That actually there is so much love you can connect to within yourself, because I work very much on a spiritual basis of connecting to a source energy, a divine energy, God, nature, Gaia. I am not specific about what you want to call that energy that you feel a connection to, but connecting to that and allowing that to show you how worthy of love, how loved you are, not your mum. You know, and having to accept that she's just not capable of that. She is not capable of taking responsibility. She is not capable of seeing your needs and putting you first. It's just not a possibility. So you have to let go of that. But it's acknowledging that it's really hard, because we are deeply programmed to need and want our mothers. It's written in the DNA. It's a survival. But when your mother has not, for one reason or another, developed the tools to be able to give you that, that's when it can be really hard. And there's a lot of societal pressure. You know, one of my deepest passions is to start removing the stigma around this stuff. Because when we talk openly, negatively about our mothers, you get vilified. You can talk about having dad's wounds. You can talk about daddy issues. That's not a problem. We're allowed to talk about daddy issues, but you talk negatively about your mother, you're a terrible human being. But it's remembering that when your mother gave birth to you or adopted you, whenever she decided she was going to be your parent, she committed to you, not the other way around. You know, you get this, you know, you owe your mother because she gave birth to you and she fed you and she put a roof over your head. That's basic. I do that for my dog. That's basic needs. You know, it doesn't mean that you owe her your happiness, your peace, your joy.
What was the phase like when you realized that you had the mother wound and this is it and you have to accept it no matter how hard it was on you?
It was a progression. It takes time. So I had a bit of a perfect storm, really. When I was 37, I had become a mother. So my eldest was about 7 years old by this point. And being a mother, you kind of reflect on, why on earth did you do that? I would never do this to my child, that to my child. You know, you start to reflect on it. Also, I started seeing the way she was treating my children and making things about her and what she needed. So I started getting protective of them. But also at the same time, I'd started seeing a counsellor. And by this time, I'd seen her quite, you know, on three separate blocks. And she'd really helped me to start seeing that there was a real issue. I remember I'd gone to see her because I was struggling to breastfeed, and she said, do you realize you're spending most of the time talking about your mum? And I was like, yeah. And then gradually, she at one point just said to me, why are you not furious with her? Like, you should be furious, but you keep defending her. And that really hit home. Like, I got home and the whole room span, because suddenly everything that I thought was true was turned upside down, because I'd always accepted my mother's perception of everything. And I was now, with the help of a very good counsellor, being able to see things from my own perspective and what the impact was on me personally. But at the same time, I worked in probation as a probation officer and had been working with domestic violence perpetrators. But I moved to working with victims, and I started working with the women. And as part of that training, we're starting to understand all the many, many different forms of abuse and harmful behaviour. And many are much less obvious than people realise, much more subtle. But it is the subtle ones that can still cause an awful lot of harm. And it was as I was looking at this and helping these women to really see their relationship more clearly, I was starting to see my relationship with my mother more clearly. It was so much of it was so familiar. So it was kind of the perfect storm of those, all those things coming together made me finally see. And then I actually lost my job working at the domestic violence charity, working with women I absolutely loved, and it caused a anxiety breakdown. But again, at that point, my relationship with my mother was deteriorating fast because I was trying to put boundaries in place and she was pushing back. My daughter at the time was going through being diagnosed autistic and learning disabled as well. So there was a lot going on. And I went back to the counsellor, and she was the first person who ever said it to me, but she just said, well, what would life look like without her in it? And I was like, you know, but I went away and we'd agreed that I would, you know, focus on more firm boundaries. And I'd rung my mum and just asked her not to come to my house for Christmas that year because I had my mother-in-law come in. And it was just too much. I was really not well. And those two didn't get on very well. I was just like, she had somewhere else she could have gone. It was too much for me. But the response I got was so angry, so spiteful, so paranoid, and no indication of any consideration for my needs and what I was going through at all, that it made me suddenly go, okay, I have no choice here. The only way I'm going to get well and be who I need to be for my children, and particularly my daughter, is by cutting contact. I had no other option. I had tried everything else by that point, but I'm so glad I did because it gave me the space to heal.
Could you explain what does cutting off cord mean? Because many people think it's just putting boundaries in place, visiting once in a way, or have their own timelines with their mothers. But what exactly do you mean?
Well, for me, cutting contact was completely that. I cut all contact, all ties. I don't speak to her. She's blocked on all my social media. She can't email me. She could have turned up on my doorstep at any point, because obviously I can't control that, or she could have written to me. But other than that, she had no point of being able to contact me. I made it very clear with extended family, I'm cutting contact. Please don't let her use you to get to me. And I was very blessed that my family, I wouldn't say took my side, but they also reduced a lot of contact with her and certainly haven't allowed her to get to me through them. And actually her mum, who's now passed, did take my side. She was my rock. She really had my back. But I think she'd been told I was a certain person by my mum. And then we'd got a chance after my grandfather died to get really close and spend a lot of time together. And she suddenly went, you're not who your mother says you are. And I am so sorry. I'm so sorry. I should have protected you more from all of this. I should have been around more, you know. And we became incredibly close. So she really had my back and and helped me through that. So when I didn't have that mother figure there anymore, she did step in a little bit in some ways. And I'm very lucky because so many women that I work with don't have that, you know, and they have to face that when they cut ties with mum, that the whole family's going to get angry. They're going to get, you know, they may end up having to cut contact with the whole family, which is extremely hard. So for many, it's not about completely cutting contact. It is about very firm boundaries. It's about maybe not allowing their mother into the home, maybe not going to their mother's home, meeting them somewhere neutral, maybe never spending time alone with their mother, making sure somebody's already with them, or maybe reducing contact to once every few months, you know, keeping phone calls to a certain length, and certainly making sure that they are getting support to, because every time they see their mum, harm can be done. So you need support to kind of process and release that harm. So making sure that you're getting professional support through that. It's, cutting contact is not the right option for everybody. I never ever tell a client you need to cut contact. That's got to be their choice. And I know it sounds very forward that my counsellor said, what would it look like? But she was just giving me an option. She gave me permission to think about it. That was all. She didn't tell me to do anything. And I would even be very careful with that. And as she was, she worked with me a long time before she said that. And it really had got to a point where there is no other options now. But most people, it's more about supporting them in what they want to do and helping them to do that in the healthiest way possible for them.
What scared you the most during this cutting off the cord?
I was terrified. My mum has physical disabilities and either walks or did. I mean, I haven't seen her for so long, but she was in a mobility scooter and had a stick. So anybody in a mobility scooter, my heart would start racing. The sound of a stick could make my heart start racing. I had real terror of her turning from my doorstep. I told the school, you know, not to let my children out to her. And I think I was probably overreacting. The fear can really ramp it up. And I had underestimated how much she would want to play the victim. She, you know, she was never going to do those things because she needed to be the victim in this circumstance. The only thing that helped me move past that was hypnotherapy. I was at the time training to be a hypnotherapist. I'm now fully qualified and been working in it for a while. But at the time, I was just training. But my mentor did a really powerful session with me that just released that fear. And I still don't want to see her and still avoid where I know she's most likely to be. But the terror isn't there anymore, which is a really good job because my grandmother died a couple of years afterwards and I had to see mum. But at no point did I speak to her or even look her in the eye. I just kept a distance the whole time.
Was this whole phase you had any sort of guilt or shame from, you know, it's like an innate thing because you're cutting cord with your mother and plus there is a family angle. Others can, even if you don't have, others can pour into you.
Yeah, I mean, I was very blessed. I didn't have many people around me who, they'd all seen what I'd been going through. So the general response from friends and family is, we're here to support you because we can see. In fact, many of them have been like, you know, they'd seen way more than I had, you know, and really knew. So most of them were extremely supportive. I did have, you know, one of my closest friends has a wonderful relationship with her mum and her dad. And she did, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to get it, but I'm here for you. And whatever you need, I'm here for you and I'm going to support that. And that was beautiful. But yes, there is judgment and there is pressure. And, you know, I had friends of hers contact me and why on earth? But once I sat and talked to them, they got it. Yes, of course, there's so much guilt. There's so much. I bounced around from relief and joy to guilt, to anger, to despair, and was all over the place. Grief. The grief is incredible because you have to grieve what you thought your relationship could be. You may, the it's likely that there was points that your mum was good or gave you something you needed, or you had moments with her, even if they were fleeting. I had lots of moments like that. You know, there was times my mum and myself would really giggle. When I was younger, she could be so much fun. She gave me my deep passion for animal welfare, for the environment, for social politics, you know, for spirituality. So there's so much I'm grateful to her for, but the price for that became so high, I couldn't pay it anymore. I had to work through that. I had to allow that grief to come through. And if you don't, it will come out in your body, in your mind in some way. Your body will hold score. So you have to, it's allowing yourself to feel all the feelings, allowing yourself to get angry. I got so angry at points because I realized because of her, I was very disconnected from, you know, larger extended parts of my family. I'd been very isolated from my own father for a long, long, long time. And I was angry. I was very angry. But then I was hurt and I was grieving. Yeah. It's a whole roller coaster of emotions, and you have to allow yourself to feel it all, but get the support to go through it. You can't do it on your own.
Wow. That must be quite a turmoil.
It's extremely hard. That's why I was, you know, I don't generally say to people you must cut contact, because it's really hard and you are left with a feeling, especially as I'd been so isolated from my father for so long, I felt like an orphan. When you've cut contact, that's your choice. You don't get that support, you don't get that love and affection, you don't get people checking in with you know, how you're doing with this. It's very lonely. My grandmother and I had my husband, and but I remember my husband at the time, his father had not long since passed, and he said, I think it's harder watching what you're going through than what I've had. And the way he lost his father was heartbreaking, but he's like, I would rather have lost my dad this way than have to go through what you're going through. And it's because there's such a lack of understanding, and people, and you feel very alone because it's not something that many people feel able to talk about, which is why I come and do podcasts like this, because I want to reach other people going through this or even thinking of going through it, to say you're not on your own and it gets better and you can heal, and that you're not a bad person for having an unhappy, unhealthy relationship with your mum, for not wanting to be around her. It does not make you a bad person. And you have a right to find your peace and to heal. And that's why I keep doing this work.
Yeah, that's so important. And it is beautiful to somebody to come out and talk. And especially, it gets the relatability so well if somebody has personally gone through and speak about it. And they can see the other side, you know, and they can speak about the other side. It's clearly what many people would want to hear who are going through the same. Have you ever wondered how your parenting would have been if you hadn't acknowledged and accepted that you had a mother wound versus now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can tell you, you know, when my daughter was very challenging when she was younger. We didn't realize she was learning disabled. We didn't realize she was autistic. I think there's possibly ADHD going on as well. And she is a beautiful little human being, but she could get very emotionally dysregulated and would attack me. And she would scream, she would scratch. You know, her little brother was terrified of her when she was younger. And my way of responding, there was a couple of times I picked her up and threw her across the room onto soft things. I never physically hurt her, but I could get close, like the rage that would come up, because they trigger wounds of, if you haven't felt heard and validated as a child, if you haven't felt seen, heard and validated, when your child does something that makes you feel like you're not being seen and you're not being heard, it brings a rage and it's a really deep pain that it brings up. Now it's realizing that is not your child's fault, but when you're there in the midst of it, it's very hard. And it's understanding that a lot of people have had this kind of relationship with a mother or a father will have complex PTSD. Now, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not an expert in complex PTSD, but what can happen is you have emotional flashbacks. Whereas with PTSD, you have flashbacks where you absolutely believe you're in that place and you can see things and hear things, explosions going off, you know, car crash, you visually get it all back, or you feel it kinesthetically. With complex PTSD, it's much more likely you'll get emotional flashbacks. So somebody will trigger that emotion in you that was caused when you were younger and you weren't allowed to express how it really made you feel. It'll come out 10 times stronger. So it's realizing when you've lost your temper with your child, it's not actually that single incident that's caused that problem. It's a whole chain of incidents going right back into childhood that's caused this. And I even had it, you know, I'm a much calmer, much happier, more peaceful parent now. I'm able, my son is, you know, he's preteen and he has these big emotions that comes up and he's not sure how to deal with them. And I'm much better now than I was with my daughter, bless her soul. I sit with him and I do it with her now when she's able, but she's so much calmer these days. But I sit with them and hold that space and be that calm energy around them while they're exploding. I don't always get it right, though. They still can be. I had an emotional flashback, I think, just a few months ago, where I felt my son was completely not hearing me and being very disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And I screamed at him. And bless his heart, and I love this, he screamed back at me, "You can't talk to me like that." And I was just like, afterwards, I was like, "God damn it, yes." He stood up to me. I was so proud of him.
Yeah, that's good.
It was really good. I was so proud of him. But I did at one point, I managed to catch myself. I managed to see what was happening. And I burst into tears, as you do. And I sat with him and just said, "I am so sorry. You were right. I shouldn't have spoken to you that way." I could see he was terrified of me. And I was like, "I never want you to feel that way." I said, "I'm really sorry. For some reason, you know, yes, the way you talked to me was not good, but I'm the adult here, you're the child. You know, it's my responsibility to stay calm, and I'm so sorry that I didn't." But it did give us that opportunity to, like, talk about it. And he knows now when I lose my temper, he can stand up to me if he really feels like I'm in the wrong. And he can let me know.
I think it's so important to kind of hold that space for your kid and also give that space to him to say what they want to feel, and also apologizing, because we are all work in progress, I believe. And the kids are one of the most, what do you say, they trigger you.
Oh my gosh, yeah. More than anybody else. Oh my God, yeah. They can push every button. Yeah. It's like, yeah, there's two things I think that will trigger all your triggers. One is your child, and one is if you decide to set up your own business. Those two things will trigger all your triggers, and you've got to move.
All the wounds are up and dancing.
Yeah.
On this note, isn't it hard to parent with the unhealed version of yourself?
You know, and I did. I had children before I'd faced my wounds, and my daughter had to take some of the consequences. And sadly, because of her learning disability, I'm not sure how she'll ever, you know, I can trust that my son will come back to me in 10, 20 years time and say, "Oi." and I can help him work through that, or I can give him the space to work through that. But my daughter, I'm not sure. So I'm very wary of that kind of stuff coming up instead in the body, and very keen to, if they are feeling big emotions, to let them out. Because what we tend to do is, if we feel our emotions are inconveniencing somebody or making them feel uncomfortable, we kind of put them away, and that's, it'll come back. And yes, you've got to be careful when feeling your feelings, to do it in a safe space with somebody who can hold that space for you. But I want to make sure for my children I am that space, and I give them that, because I know, and I share very openly that over the last year I've had, I was diagnosed with very, very early stage breast cancer and had to have a mastectomy and reconstruction. And there was a lot of emotions. There was so many emotions that came up with that for the whole family, not, you know, obviously for my children, my husband, but there was a lot that came up. And what I had to do as I went through this was let those emotions come up. And there was times where, like, people are just, it's calm down, it's okay. I'm like, no, I'm not calming down. I have a right to feel these feelings. I'm in a safe place. I'm going to damn well let them out. And it was, and it's giving that space to my children as well. But yes, certainly this last year has taught me that tenfold.
So sorry to hear this, but I'm glad that you're doing good now.
Oh, thank you.
It must have been a very challenging time physically and mentally, because recently you had to heal from the mother wound, and then physically as well adds to it.
I mean, I would say with the mother wounds, you never really stop with the healing. You just keep going deeper. So I would never say I'm completely healed. And I would always say, if you meet somebody who says they're completely healed, run. Run. No, you're always going deeper. Always going deeper with the healing. But yes, I also think there will have been parts, because I do think all illnesses have some emotional root causes. I'm not saying there isn't medical as well. I completely see it from both sides, but I always think there is some emotional root causes. And often there is a link between breast cancer and nurturing relationship and whether you've not been nurtured. So I also think there is environmental factors and chemicals that we're living in and around that are causing huge issues. So I think that, you know, there's a combination of things that contributed to it. But it did bring up deep emotional healing in a whole different way going through this. And there was still those wounds of not asking for help, still wounds of more like my relationship with my body. My mum never had a good relationship with her body. And whilst I think she never meant to pass any of that on to me, some of it did. And I'm still working on some of that stuff as well. So that it just kind of took my healing to a whole other level, and still is. You know, I'm still processing it.
So can you explain the concept of inner child healing?
I love inner child healing, but you will get most people will run for the hills if you mention it. And that's because they think when you say inner child healing that it's all about your experiences as a child. Now, yes, we do healing around experiences you had as a child, but actually what it's more about is connecting with a part of you, an energy within you that is a child, that is curious, playful, innocent, and is so needing of love, safety, protection, nurturance. And often when we haven't received that, that inner child is hurting, and that inner child will hold us back from doing so many things. But if you bring that inner child love, acceptance, validate the way it feels, validate all those things it never got to say, make it feel safe and loved, that inner child can help you reconnect with a love of the world, seeing beauty in the smallest things, curiosity, playfulness. They can really ignite a beautiful energy within, and it's so powerful. Now, inner child work, there's certain protocols for working with inner child, and that came from John Bradshaw. And his protocol is you work with the inner child from pre-birth right up to being in their 20s, because your brain is not fully developed till you're 26. So that inner child is a long period of time. Now, I've done a lot of inner child work on myself with my own hypnotherapist, and I do think there is lots of different ways to do inner child work, but I found the most powerful is through hypnotherapy. And John Bradshaw's protocol does involve some hypnosis exercises, but his is a lot more about sitting and drawing with the inner child, writing back and forth to the inner child, which is wonderful. But I really love doing that hypnotherapy because it gets you in a space where you are with your inner child and building that relationship. Now, there's some people I've worked with, I've put them in the room with their inner child, brought their inner child forward in hypnosis, and they really don't get on. There's, you know, huge trust issues. So it takes time to kind of get that relationship. Because I work from a spiritual approach, the way I help them to really see their inner child, not their experiences. That beautiful energy is I either call forward a spirit guide, higher self, or what's been really powerful is calling forward a past loved one. So often it was like a grandma or an aunt who really cherished them when they were children, bringing forward that energy and getting them to see their inner child through that person's eyes. And the love that comes through is so strong. And I really, love is incredibly healing, incredibly powerful. And that's generally what's been missing. So it's bringing it back in and bringing it to the inner child is incredibly powerful. It's deeply emotional work. Like, don't wear mascara if you're coming to see me. And I have lots of tissues. But it's really cleansing and igniting. It just transforms everything. I'd done an awful lot of inner child work before I was diagnosed with the breast cancer, and I really believe had I not, I would not have been able to deal with it as calmly as I did. That inner child would have been terrified, but as it was, she felt safe and knew I had her back and I was going to take care of her, take care of me, do what I needed to do to get healthy and well in every shape and form. So yes, I had some dark days and some bad days, but generally I handled it very calmly and with a lot of love for myself. And I do put that largely down to the inner child work that I've done.
Can you share a moment or an experience when you were healing your inner child, which wrought like a significant difference in your life? You were like,
could describe quite a few, to be fair, because I've worked with my inner child at different points. I think two probably really show the different ways it can really help. So at one point I had somebody else was going through severe mental health issues, and it was triggering stuff for me because of having to take care of my mom through. She often would talk about suicide and self-harm, and I would be the one stopping her if she was hitting herself or having these huge meltdowns. And so being around somebody who was very close to me, who was a source of support, seeing them breaking down caused this massive anxiety to come up in me. And so I have a mentor I work with around my hypnotherapy, and I had a session with him, and we immediately, from this, emotions are incredible. Emotions are not good, bad, negative, or positive. They are a guide. And in hypnosis, we use those emotions to guide us to where does the healing need to take place. So as soon as he put me in hypnosis, I'm going to being 12 years old, stood in my mother's bedroom, watching her screaming and hitting herself around the head. And I am frozen to the spot because I don't know what to do. I'm 12 years old, but I also dare not leave. I cannot leave her in this state, you know. And at that point, I buried my inner child 6 foot deep. I can't be a child anymore. I have to take care. I have to be a good, responsible, mature daughter. And take. I mean, mature was a word that got thrown at me so much. Put me on such pedestals. I often fell off. But it was this deep responsibility to be that good, mature, caregiving daughter. So I buried her. So in that hypnosis session, there was an awful lot of pain and emotion that came up. I was in hypnosis for quite a long time, just literally letting all this pain out. But that enabled me to unbury this 12-year-old, let her be seen. Let her know that she's safe. I've got her, and she is not responsible for taking care of her mother, of making her mother safe and stable. In fact, the only person that could have done that is my mom. You know, she had to do that for herself. It was not my responsibility at 12 years old. So really taking her out of that environment and just allowing her to be a child, allowing her to express her feelings and making her feel seen and loved. And so I developed this really lovely relationship with my inner child at that age. A later session came up, and it was because around my business, I was feeling this block. Money was just not coming in. Like, I just, things were just not happening. But I could feel an energetic block. I wasn't really sure what was going on. So again, my mentor put me into hypnosis. Make it very clear as well with hypnosis, it's putting you into a deep, relaxed state where you just look inward. You're not going to sleep. He is not in control of me. He's just my guide. So making it very clear, there's some very funny ideas about what hypnosis is. Hypnosis is merely a trance that we go into, and we go into it several times a day. When you're doing something, just automatically, that's you in a trance. And that's all we do, is we use trance to access these deep emotions and bring the healing. So he put me into hypnosis, and I went to being in my childhood home, and I could see my inner four-year-old holding on to my mum's energy. My mum's energy was coming in through a window, and it's holding on to the energy. Now, when I was 4 years old, my mum was at drama college. She wasn't around very much, and I was taken care of by a nanny who was horrible. And so when my mum was out, I would hug her clothes because she wasn't there. I would hug her clothes, and I was hugging this energy just like I used to hug her clothes. So she was letting my mum's energy still come in, and she was furious. My inner four-year-old was screaming at me, "How can you talk about mummy this way? You can't do this to mummy," really screaming at me. And she would not let me near her. I couldn't get close. So my hypnotherapist said, "Try bringing in your inner 12-year-old. So I brought in my inner 12-year-old. She got down on her knees and she spoke to her. And I can't remember exactly what she said to her, but it was about, you know, this energy is not safe. It's not going to keep you safe. What we're doing will keep you safe. And I don't know what she said. I can't remember everything. But she managed to talk around to the point she let go of that energy, which we then protected and made sure couldn't come back in. And I scooped her up in my arms, but she was still really tense. She was in my arms, but she was really tense. At which point my grandfather stepped forward, my mum's father, and just looked her deep in the eyes. And she went, "Oh," and all the tension went out of her, because she knew if my granddad agreed that this was the right thing, that this must be the right thing. And she just calmed. He didn't say anything. He just looked her deep in the eyes, like, "We've got you." And my grandmother was around me and everything. And this little four-year-old just calmed right down. And we did some other work in that hypnosis session. But the funniest thing was, when I came out of the hypnosis session, some money that I'd been owed, £400, in my account.
Magic.
Me and my hypnotherapist were just laughing our socks off, like, "Oh my Lord." So something had definitely been cleared. But it's inner child work is very powerful, very deep, very healing, and it really can change your life, and you become so much less reactive to the world.
That's beautiful to hear. After this emotional turmoil and healing you went through, do you remember the moment for the first time you felt you were at peace?
It's been so gradual and bit by bit. I remember one moment when, before I'd cut contact with her, but I'd started seeing things more clearly thanks to the counsellor. And I remember being really het up. And I'm in a soft play area of all places, which any parent knows soft play is not fun for a parent. It's just so noisy. But I was sat there with my husband and I was in all knots. And then I suddenly realised, what am I doing to myself? How, I can't let her do this to me. And I just chose again. I just paused. And the power is always in the pause. But I paused and just thought, well, where am I right now? She's not here. And being in the present moment is incredibly powerful. I just realized I was with my husband, with my children who are off giggling, laughing. I am here now and she's not here and I'm okay. And it just flooded out. Now, it's once that peace has come, it doesn't just stay. Because life throws stuff at us all the time. So it's remembering to choose it again every day.
Yeah. So I think we are end of the episode, and I would like to kind of end it with the three questions I have for you, for our listeners to, you know, just start off their journey if they're reluctant to start theirs. Mm-hmm. So my first question is, do you have recommendations in the books for whatever topics we have spoken earlier, or who wants mm-hmm. to start their journey?
So the books I would recommend, and that if you're just starting to understand your own mother wounds, and I always put a caveat with this, that understanding is only the first step, and don't get stuck in just, you know, what's a narcissistic mother, emotionally immature. If you stay focused on that, thinking that by understanding it you can fix her, it's not going to happen. It's just understanding to release you of the guilt and the feeling of responsibility, so you can then move on and start healing yourself. But some of the wonderful books for that first point of just getting to understand what on earth's going on is Bethany Webster's Discovering the Inner Mother. It's a beautiful book, so well written, from a woman who's experienced a very similar relationship to mine, deeply enmeshed. Dr. Lindsay Gibson's written a really wonderful book called Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents. That's a really good book. And she's also got, there's a workbook that's with it. I've not worked through that one myself yet, but I trust her. She's brilliant. For those who, like yourself, lost a mother young, there's a really good book called Mother Hunger by Kelly McDaniel that's just come out with Hay House. And that's more around that. It's not, there is some parts in there about if you've experienced a toxic or, you know, abusive relationship, but it's about all different ways that we can have a mother hunger, that we didn't get the nurturing protection that we, and guidance that we should have got from our mothers, for whatever reason, and how you can start healing that. So that's a really lovely book. And if you have experienced a really difficult, possibly abusive, toxic relationship with your mum, there's a really good book for just kind of, doesn't give any advice, it's just somebody telling their story, but it's by Jenny McCurdy, and it's called I'm Glad My Mother Died. And it was her relationship with her mother was deeply enmeshed, but incredibly harmful. The things it was doing to her was awful, caused issues around food and anorexia, bulimia. Food disorders can quite often be linked to the relationship with a mum. So it's always worth, it's not meaning it's the mother's fault by a long shot. It can just be that there's conflict there. So that's a really wonderful book. It's very well read, very well written. You just, very engaging book. But it can just help you feel that, okay, it's not just me going through this, and it's okay to have these feelings about a mother. And the complex, you know, she talks about missing her and loving her, but the same, you know, same time she's so relieved she's gone and she's free from it. So it really helps you in navigating those emotions.
What advice would you give to those people who feel stuck, angered and lonely in understanding themselves?
I would really work with a professional who understands mother wounds. Reach out, find a good counsellor, a coach, hypnotherapist who really knows their stuff. I really love hypnotherapy, but I think there's a lot to be said for internal family systems. That's a really good therapeutic approach around this stuff as well. But somebody that can help you release some of this stuff, like EDMR can be a really positive tool as well. But really the key first is understanding what those unhealthy relationships can look like. So reading those books can be really helpful. And then it's about reconnecting with who you truly are, not who she's told you you are. And really finding out who you are and giving yourself the time and space to do that. And if that means cutting contact temporarily or putting firm boundaries in place, cutting contact altogether, whatever that needs to be for you, giving yourself permission to do that. I always talk about boundaries in three different ways. There's the physical, where you reduce that physical contact in one way or another. Emotional is giving yourself the permission and that you have a right to do that. And then I talk about spiritual, which is more energetics. So making sure you're protecting your energy fields and things like that. But putting those boundaries in place and giving yourself the time to reconnect with who you are and making sure you're engaging with a professional that understands, and if you can, a group or women or people who've had the similar experience. And but be wary. I've been in some groups of like daughters of narcissistic mother type groups where it's almost been a competition for who's got the worst mother. Don't stay out of those groups. And actually, if it's very much focused on my mum's shit, my mum's crap, my mum's done this, the other, again, stay away from these groups. This isn't about your mum. This is about you, your healing. I run a group, a free group on Facebook, and I don't allow that kind of talk and language. It doesn't come up, to be honest. The women that are in there are so beautiful. It's all about us and our healing and loving ourselves through that. Yes, it's a safe space to come and say, ah, my mother's driving me crazy. But it's all about you and how you can start to heal.
What practical steps or exercise would you recommend for people who have starting their inner child healing?
There, again, do it with a professional, because it's deep stuff. Don't do this on your own. I really put a strong caveat on that you need to do it with a professional. But really simple things you can do to start connecting with your inner child is writing to your inner child. But you do it so you write your question with your dominant hand, and you allow your inner child to reply with your non-dominant hand. By using your non-dominant hand, you're connecting with your subconscious, and that allows that inner child to come through. So it's a really simple way of doing it. But also doing things, getting out into nature, spending time with animals, a really good way of connecting with your inner child. Doing those, you know, sitting on a swing, going by the sea, things you enjoyed as a child. Reconnecting with those things. But please, please, please work with a professional who understands inner child work, because it's really deep work and can bring stuff up, and you need support to work through that.
Why do you think there is so much of a stigma around going to a counselor? I mean, there is an upsurge in like people connecting to the professionals, but there is still a kind of a stigma. Everything is a little hushed up. It's not where it needs to be.
No, it's still, especially for men, and it breaks my heart. I see men around me suffering unnecessarily, and it's because they believe it makes them look weak. No, I have to be strong. There's that real pressure for men to be the strong one to keep going. And quite often the women who really carry that hyper-independence wound. But a lot of it's a fear of having to feel the feelings. Those feelings feel too big, and they worry that it will just overwhelm them. But a good therapist will hold that space for you without judgment. So find somebody who you feel safe with. It takes courage and strength to do the inner work. There's nothing sexier in a man that's doing the inner work, you know, seeing them really. I'm seeing my husband do some amazing stuff at the minute, and I've never, ever been more proud of him. It's not weakness, it's absolute strength and courage to do this. But also the right therapist will enable that too.
I will leave your details in the show notes. Is there anything else you would like to add for people who want to connect with you?
You can find me on all the social media. Like you will have all the links. It's all there. And I do have a really lovely free group in Facebook if people just want to make the, you know, dip your toe in. But if you want to book in and have a chat with me, I'm always here. I would always rather somebody reached out, and if I'm not the right fit, I will help you find the right fit.
That's amazing. Thank you, Geraldine. It's been an amazing talking to you on the topics which are so hushed upon, but you opened it so eloquently. And thank you for being vulnerable and sharing your experiences on this episode.
Oh, thank you so much for giving me the space.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Discovering Journeys. I would love for this podcast to reach as many people as possible. So please remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a positive review. Share this podcast with someone you think who would appreciate this conversation. Check out the show notes for all the links and details. Until next time, keep embracing your journey and discovering new paths.